Right now, I'd like to introduce our next speaker, Brian Kaplan. He's an associate professor of economics at George Mason University and the author of The Myth of the Rational Voter, Why Democracies Choose Bad Policies. His writings have been published in the American Economic Review, the Economic Journal, the Journal of Law and Economics, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, and many other outlets. He's appeared on 2020, C-SPAN, and the BBC. He's currently writing a new book, Selfish Reasons to Have More Kids, due in 2011 with Basic Books. He blogs at EconLog, and he's named a top economics blog by the Wall Street Journal. Please join me in welcoming Brian Kaplan.
Thanks very much for having me. All right, education is one of what I call the Holy Trinity. The other two being healthcare and the environment. These are kinds of, or these are goods where virtually everyone agrees that we should have more, and virtually everyone agrees that we should have better. And so a politician who values his job does not go in front of a national audience and say, we are spending too much money on education. Enough is enough. Good enough. It's fine the way it is. And a few years ago, there was a headline in The Onion to the effect of President Bush says that we should discontinue low-yield, high-risk investment in nation's youth. And it is, in case you don't know, The Onion is a humor newspaper, right? If you have not heard of The Onion, it's very funny, at least to many of us. So, and this headline was so absurd to most people that you could just put it there, and I was reading and saying, well, maybe it is low-yield, high-risk investment, and so maybe we should do less of it. Okay. Now, education is also a rare example of a kind of spending where both economists and the public generally agree that we're not investing enough. Right. So in my last lecture, I'm going to talk about all the ways that economists and the public disagree, and they are very many and very inconsistent. Education is one of the very weird cases where economists and the public do agree, where economists and the public do see eye to eye, where not only does the public think that we need to be doing more, but economists will say, yes, that's actually right. The broken clock is right twice a day, and education is one of those times that that the public actually has it right. Right now, when you go into the economics of education literature, what you'll see is that economists estimate something called the rate of return to education. So I presume that everyone here, before you went to college, you went to an Excel spreadsheet, and then you calculated, you put down a bunch of numbers about how much money you make with college and without college, and what the cost of tuition was, and how much money you could be earning in and out of school. And then you went through the numbers and tried many different alternative scenarios. And finally, after weeks of deliberation and studying the numbers, you decided that you would go to college, or maybe decided that you would not, right? No, actually, most people do not do this, but economists who study education have done this for you. Right? Economists who study education have done this for you, or at least they've done it for the average person. And the usual conclusion that they get is that education actually pays extremely well. Right? Education actually pays extremely well, particularly if your parents are paying the tuition. Right? Right? If you're paying your own tuition, then it's a little bit harder. The best deal might be if you get your parents to give you the money that they would have spent on tuition, and then you can invest it in some other asset. Right? Anyone's parents willing to do that for you? Right? That requires a high level of trust. Right? But anyway, when economists study the return to education and try to estimate what kind of, how well this investment actually pays, it's quite common to get an estimate of something like getting maybe an 8 or 10% rate of return. If you go and do some adjustments, maybe that'll get down to 5 or 6%. But still, this is not bad at all. Right? Certainly, that's a lot better than the stock market has done in recent years, for example. Okay. So the standard return to education estimates are at least pretty high. And these estimates do not actually count another effect that economists consider important for education, which is the positive externalities. So many economists will say, we are all better off if people in general have more education, and yet when we estimate the return to education, we're just looking at how much is in it for the individual. So many economists will then say, so actually, the benefits of education are even larger than they seem. Not only does it pay the individual amply to get more education, but also society is better off if more people go because there's so many people other than the student himself who gets a payoff from it. Okay, standard story. Okay, so this is a standard story, and many people study education their entire lives without ever going past it. And yet, it seems to me that if you actually pay attention to what goes on in classrooms, there's something really strange that is going on, which is most classes teach no job skills. Most classes teach no job skills. So right now, I'm in the 35th grade. I have not been out of school since I was 5 years old. And it is almost impossible for me not to notice. You sit down in a classroom, the professor or teacher goes and talks about something that virtually no job on earth requires you to know. Right? So some obvious example, history. Right? What jobs require knowledge of history? See, history teacher, history professor, writer of history books, and then, all right, what else? What else? A politician? No, you probably could be a politician without knowing much history, knowing very little. And after that, well, I can't think of any job that really requires knowledge of history, and yet how many years did you sit in a classroom hearing about history? A very great number. If you're anything like mine, I don't know, maybe 8 years of coursework studying history at least. Right, and then start going down the list of other subjects that you are expected to learn. So foreign languages. Right now, if the foreign language is English, then there probably is a payoff. But for most Americans, to learn a foreign language has almost no career benefit because virtually no jobs in the United States require knowledge of foreign languages. Right? And if you go to, and even if you say, well, maybe I'm going to go and work abroad. You want to work abroad? Wow, they all speak English. I try to speak the foreign language to them that I studied in school and learned very poorly, and instead they respond in English, and before you know, we're all talking English and having a great time. Right? So foreign languages and seem to very much pay off. But advanced mathematics, how many jobs use advanced mathematics? Well, more than use history. That's right. More jobs use advanced mathematics than use history, but still. So trigonometry. Right, let's see, how many jobs require knowledge of trigonometry? So maybe some engineering, a few others. Just not very many. I have a Russian colleague when I told him, you know, Ilya, most Americans who study calculus never use it in their jobs. He's like, oh, calculus is very useful. It's like, in a few jobs. But most people study it will never have a job where calculus is required. What are these jobs? Like almost all of them. Tell me the ones where you do use calculus. They're very rare. Right, and you go down the list, other classes you may have in college, philosophy. Right, philosophy where, let's see, a philosophy professor, you might use the job, let's see, philosophy high school teacher. If there were high schools that had high school philosophy courses, and, I guess there may be a few. And after that, what are you going to be, like, popular philosopher? Okay, so, yeah, not a lot of jobs that use that. And even when you look at subjects that on the surface appear very useful, it's striking how much time you spend doing things that are not useful in those courses. So you take English, you study English. English is useful. And then what do you study in English? Shakespeare. We study the English language that existed many hundreds of years ago, as it is not used any longer. All right. So and what exactly is the point of that? It's like, well, if you learn how they conjugated verbs in Elizabethan England, then you truly understand your own language and will be better at conjugating. Yes. Either that or maybe you should study conjugation of actual current English. Maybe that would be a better way of learning the subject at hand. All right, so, and then when I look at, say, kindergarten, and then, wow, they teach art. Yes, my kids are very depressed because they're not very good at art. And I say, you know what? I'm going to let you in a secret. You don't need to know art. You can live a very full life without being good at drawing. I say, take me. I can't draw anything, and yet I've had a fine life. And your mother, too, she's good at drawing, but she does not have to draw in her job. You say, on the other hand, imagine what it would be like if you were not very good at reading. That's actually tough. Right? That does limit your options if you're not so good at reading. All right, so you take a look at the courses that you have spent, and every person in this room is an expert on this. Every person in this room has spent at least 10 years in school of some kind. I guess there's some homeschoolers, so hopefully you do not spend so much time in useless stuff, but it wouldn't surprise me if you did. Right, especially if you have to pass some state tests in order to continue to be allowed to homeschool. Then you really need to continue learning stuff that isn't very useful. Okay, so most classes teach no job skills. Now, at this point, many libertarians would be tempted to say, well, of course, government is in charge, government's inefficient, they make people learn a lot of stuff that's useless. But there's a puzzle. Look, if it's really completely useless, why is it that employers care? Right? Because on the one hand, you sit in school studying mind-numbing subjects that appear to have no practical application, and you may even remember every now and then you have a class where there's a smart aleck who raised his hand and said, what does this have to do with real life, teacher? And the teacher would give a pitying look. Say, one day you'll see how important trigonometry is in daily life. Your trigonometric identities. Right, to say something that's especially unuseful. Okay, so it seems awfully strange. On the one hand, it looks useless. On the other hand, the market is rewarding it. So many libertarians would tend to say, well, I guess foreign languages are useful somehow or other. Not that you actually need to be able to speak them to do the job, but somehow foreign languages are useful because the market would not reward it if the skill were not, in fact, desirable. Okay, so we take a look at the world and we see that employers appear to be paying a large premium to people who study subjects that are unrelated to their work. And this is often truly pathological in that you could be, say, one Aristotle class short of your bachelor's degree, and someone will not consider you for a sales job. If only, the person probably is figuring that you need to understand Aristotle's metaphysics in order to sell stuff. Probably not. So what are they thinking, actually? Why is it an employer would say, look, the guy didn't finish, or one Aristotle class short, and, this job absolutely requires knowledge of the Nicomachean Ethics. If you don't know that, if you don't know Aristotle's definition of virtue, there's no way that you can go and sell computing supplies. It just can't be done. All right, seems odd. All right, so on the one hand, we have the puzzle of schools appear to be teaching a lot of things which are not actually useful in any job, or very few jobs. On the other hand, employers care, even though what you learn in school appears to not be useful in the job. And presumably, if you get a job and then you realize, my God, what am I going to do? I got good grades, but I didn't actually really learn the material. And then now how am I going to be able to do this job that I've been hired for? And then, I don't actually need to know that stuff. All right. So you put all this together and wonder what's going on, and it's not that easy to explain at first. But it turns out that in economics there is a very easy, simple model that accounts for all these facts. It is called the signaling model. The signaling model of education, when we apply it to education. There are two key assumptions behind the signaling model of education. First one is that there are hard-to-observe differences between people. In this case, between, say, the quality of a worker. Right? So just looking out at this room, it is not that easy for me to simply look at you and decide whether or not you're a good or a bad worker. And if we were wandering down the street, it would be even harder. You look at people, is that guy a good worker? Is that guy a bad worker? It's not that easy to tell. Right? Again, if someone is dressed in rags, then you might suspect wouldn't be a very good worker. So there are some things that you might tell from visual inspection. But still, it is pretty hard to just look at a person and know whether or not that person is a good or bad worker. So that is the first key assumption of signaling models, which I say is pretty clear. But the second assumption, and this is the crucial one, is that the actual real differences in quality of workers have to correlate with the cost of an observable activity, correlate with the cost of an observable activity. Okay, so there has to be some tendency for people who are better at something to have a lower cost at doing something that is observable. Okay, and then, if you see that some people are doing more of that costly observable thing than others, you can infer that the person that is doing more of that costly observable thing is probably a better worker than a person who is not doing it or a person who is doing less. Okay, so in the case of education, this would say, for example, that maybe there are workers who are smart and there are workers who are not so smart. Okay. Now, if you were to just go and look at them, you might have trouble deciding whether or not the worker is smart or not smart. So, one way they might be able to signal or to show to you how smart they are is by going and studying a bunch of subjects that have no actual practical relevance. Then they get some grades in those subjects. Then you show the grades to the employer, and the employer says, aha, this person got A's in a bunch of subjects. They may not seem very related to this job, but I know that people who get good grades tend to be smart, and smart workers tend to be good. So I will reward this person for having done well in all these courses, even though you don't need to know any of the material in these courses in order to do this job. Right, so that is one signaling story you might have. A similar one would be maybe that education shows whether or not you are disciplined and hardworking. Right, so anybody here know someone who is incredibly smart who either didn't go to college or dropped out? Yes, I know some people like that. What's wrong with them? What is their problem? Yes, I actually had a very good friend at Berkeley who was genius level IQ, and on things that he was interested in, he was extremely motivated. Right? So he wrote in high school what were called shareware games in those days. I don't know, they still have shareware. So he went and wrote video games. He posted them on the early version of the internet and requested that people voluntarily send them $25 if they liked his game. Every day he would get about 4 checks in the mail. Right? So this is like 1989, so this is a lot of money that he's getting. And you can imagine all the people who weren't paying him. So people liked his games, was very, very smart, and yet he failed out after a year. And only that, he failed peace and conflict studies, which is known at Berkeley as being about the easiest course that you can have. You just write what you feel about peace and conflict. And as long as your feelings are critical or negative, you know that you are going to at least get a C in the course. You say, I feel that war is very beautiful, and then you might be in trouble. But how is it that he managed to fail peace and conflict studies? He refused to go to the final exam. Wasn't that he forgot? He refused to go. Why did he refuse to go? Because he thought the class was stupid. Okay. All right, and then after this, he wound up getting a very good job at a computer firm, but he was never a very good employee. because the attitude that he took with him was also one that he took with him to the job. So he might, the boss might say, look, we're moving on to a new project here. The other one, we're canceling it. It's not working out. He said, no, I'm not moving on to a new project. I'm going to finish the one I started. That's the one that interests me. This is a job. So you're being paid to do things that might not interest you so much or might not be your first choice. Right, so he bounced around from job to job, right, as a result of this. Okay, so education then might signal that you're hardworking or conscientious. So if you're lazy, if you find sitting down and doing something that's boring for many hours to be a pain, then you are not as likely to go as far in school. Education might just signal conformity and obedience. Might just signal that you are willing to endure terrible boredom for many, many years, right? And then an employer says, you know what? I'm looking for someone with that skill. I'm looking for someone who is good at enduring boredom. You know what? This job is not Disneyland. This is not a fun job. This is a work job. This is a tough job where you repeatedly do a bunch of things that no one would do for free. And if you manage to get through all those years of school with good grades, then you probably are able to do that. Okay. All right. Now, in the signaling model, employers might pay workers a lot to show their stuff, even if the display itself is wasteful. Right? Wasteful in what sense? Wasteful in the sense is the employer does not directly care about it. He only cares about what you show via doing this wasteful thing. Okay? So if the way that you show your stuff is by, say, studying Aristotle, and you get an A in Aristotle, the employer says, hey, this guy showed that he is smart, right? It's not easy to read Aristotle, show that he's hardworking, managed to get through the course, shows that he's willing to do something that many consider boring. No offense to some Aristotle fans in the room. Yes, I don't find him boring, I guess he's not the most exciting guy either. But I did voluntarily read several books by Aristotle, but not in the last 10 years. All right, so employers might voluntarily reward workers for showing their stuff, right? Even if the stuff that you show is of no direct interest to them. Right? Even if the stuff is of no direct interest to them, they might pay you tens of thousands of dollars extra per year simply because you have demonstrated a certain talent. Okay? Now, to understand what the signaling model is saying, think back to all the arrogant teachers you ever had, which is a lot of them. It's one of the main returns of being a teacher, is the right to be arrogant and to look down on people. Right? So that's what I noticed. So if you think back to to some of your arrogant teachers, they probably gave you the lecture of, look, you show up here a lump of human clay. You're nothing. You're just a potential. You're just a piece of clay. And what do? I mold you into a beautiful sculpture. I mold you into a beautiful sculpture. Then I put you into the fire. And then I sell you to employers. Last stage. Teacher may not actually say that part, but it's implicit. Okay, now that is the standard story that most economists believe about education. Students show up as mere potential, they show up as clay, the teacher shapes them into something that the market desires, and then they put them in the kiln, they stay that way, and then employers like you. Okay, the signaling model is a very different story. According to the signaling model, you arrive as a fully formed sculpture, right, in the extreme version of the signaling model, you arrive as a fully formed sculpture. However beautiful a sculpture you will ever be, you are already when you show up at class. And what does your teacher do? He puts a sticker on you. Puts a sticker on you saying, beautiful, or not so beautiful, like really ugly. your teacher puts a label on you, right? That is what the point of school is. It's not to change people, but to label them. All right, now, of course, when you think about it more, you say, well, look, it's not like 100% of the courses that you spend in school are ones that are not valued by employers, and that's absolutely right. Right, so sometimes when I'm speaking, I make it sound like I think that education is 100% signaling. No, even I don't think that. Yes, there are some useful skills that are taught in school. As I said, most classes, or at least a lot of classes, do not teach useful skills. Some do. Right? Reading and writing is genuinely useful. Right? Many kinds of math are genuinely useful. There's a few other subjects that you may have taken at some point that have some practical application. Okay, so if you've ever taken computer science, or how about driver's ed? Driver's ed actually is kind of useful. Maybe not. Well, actually, there are plenty of jobs that use driver's ed. Right? Any job where you have to drive a car, in a sense, uses driver's ed. All right, so I'm not saying then that 100% of all education is signaling, but I am saying that a high fraction of it is. A high fraction of it is signaling. Right? Because, of course, if a job requires reading and writing and you don't have very good reading and writing, then you don't need any big theory about why employers are not hiring you when you don't know how to read and write. But you do need some kind of a story about why they don't want to hire you when you've missed an Aristotle class. Right? That's a bit odd. Okay, so who cares about all this? What difference does it make? What difference does it make? Okay, well, selfishly speaking, it doesn't make any difference at all, which is the beauty of the model. All right, so you can go your whole life trying to do well in school without ever wondering what the point is. Right? Why do you ever need to know what the point is? All you need to know for practical purposes is that if you go and get some additional years of education, employers will pay you extra money. The end. Doesn't matter why. Right? The only reason you would need to know is, first of all, out of intellectual curiosity. Like if you ever were in a class and saying, this is so boring and pointless, why am I here? And the signaling model is there to say, ah, this is why you're here. You're here because you need to show your abilities. You need to go and show off your abilities because they're hard for employers to observe. So the easiest way for you to go and show people that you have these abilities is sit here and suffer for years. That's the answer. All right. Selfishly speaking, it doesn't really matter why you're in school. As long as you know that you get paid for doing it, you can go ahead and do it, and that's fine. Right. And again, employers don't even need to really understand the story. All that employers need to know is when they go and hire someone who did badly in school, that they are not worth a high salary to them. If an employer knows that, say, look, once I hired a guy who had all Fs and he was a terrible employee, I'm never doing that again. And you say, yeah, but why? He had Fs in a bunch of subjects that were relevant to real life. Employer doesn't need to really wonder about that. Whatever. I don't know why. All I know is I'm not doing that again because I lost money. And so the students don't need to understand, and employers don't need to understand in order for the model to work. So who does care? Well, someone's curious. But the other reason why you might want to understand the model is for making education policy. Right? If you are wondering about what kind of education system is a good one, what kind of government policy towards education would be, say, economically efficient or ethically wise, right, or ethically justified, what signaling models imply is that, contrary to economists' usual story, education actually has some big negative externalities. Economists usually talk about positive externalities, like, oh, well, education reduces crime, education makes people into better citizens, education makes it easier to get people to give you directions that are accurate when you happen to be lost, right? So on. So economists usually focus on these positive externalities. The signaling model implies that education actually has big negative externalities. Here's the best way to think about it. So classic story, everyone is sitting down at a concert, you want to see better, what is something that you personally can do as an individual in order to get a better view? Stand up. Therefore, it follows with absolute certainty that if everyone in the concert stands up, everyone can see better, right? No, wrong. It does not follow. In fact, what happens if everyone stands up, then probably nobody sees better. I guess, there's few people who happen to have a really high ratio of leg length to height do benefit. Right, so people with unusually long legs relative to their height do benefit if everybody stands up, but their feet still hurt. Okay, so... It is not true that because one person who stands up at a concert, that one person can see better, that if everyone stands up, everyone can see better. And what the signaling model is saying is that the same holds for education. One person gets more education, that one person makes more money. Great. Therefore, this is a wonderful thing for government to subsidize, we should always want more and better of it. Wrong. Right? Because if you subsidize it, it's not just the case that one more person is going to get more education, a whole lot of more people are going to get more education. And what is life going to be like if a lot more people have heavily signaled or been encouraged to signal that they are smart, that they're hardworking, that they're conformist, and so on? Well, basically what it means is that if the average person has one more year, what do you need to do to distinguish yourself? You need to get an additional year on top of that. So back in 1945, only about 25% of Americans over the age of 25 finished high school. So back in those days, you could go and introduce your fiancé to your mom as a college graduate. And your mom might say, wow, she's a brilliant girl. As a high school graduate. Did I say college? Yeah, as a high school graduate. Finished high school. Not many people do that. Right, so finishing high school was actually a big deal back in the old days and was a sign that you were at least middle management material. Now, if you were to go around saying, I finished high school, look at me, people would think that was kind of funny. I do. Depending upon what circles you travel in, but if you went into a corporation and tried to say, I finished high school. All right then. So explain to me the many attractive opportunities you have for me as a high school graduate. Say, well, I will. We have a few, and allow me to show them to you. You might perhaps eventually become a manager of the janitors, okay, as, for example. That might be a job that you would be qualified for as a high school graduate. First, of course, you'll need to learn the trade of actually being a janitor. Then we'll consider your promotion after a few years. Okay, so may not be quite that bad, but still, it is not really considered very impressive that someone has gone to high school anymore because so many more people have finished high school. Right now, the percentage of people over the age of 25 who finish college is about 25%. So now that says something about you. It's not incredibly impressive because one in four people over the age of 25 has done it, but it still does put you apart from the pack to some degree. But now, if you want to really impress people, you need to get an advanced degree. So, you know, you get a master's degree, get a PhD. That's what you now need to do in order to show people how great you really are. Okay, so 50 years ago, someone might have been able to be a professor in many schools with only a master's degree, right? Or they might have actually been able to be hired as an instructor after they finished their undergraduate degree and when they're working on their master's degree. Now, that would be extremely rare. Okay, so basically, according to the signaling model, if the government were to, say, subsidize signaling, the result is that everybody signals more. And then employers, in order to decide who to pick, just increase their standards. Right? So employers are looking to get people who are in the top 10% to do a job. If people are encouraged to get more education from the government subsidy, this just changes the amount of education that you need in order to impress people. Okay? So another way you can think about it is that in the signaling model, education is, at least to a substantial degree, about jumping through hoops. So what happens if the government encourages people to jump through more hoops? Then, in order to indicate to people that you are a good hoop jumper, you have to jump through additional hoops. You have to spend more and more of your years in school. Okay, so if you ever have the feeling that, oh, it's taking me a really long time to start real life, like, you know, go and read, in previous centuries, right now, many people would have had almost 10 years on the job. Right now, I'm reading The Count of Monte Cristo, and the guy who becomes The Count of Monte Cristo, he's going to be appointed a captain at the age of 20, which people at the time consider a little young to put a man in charge of a ship. Anyway, I remember, you know, these are like big ships that are, you know, incredibly large investments. And yet, you know, in 19th century France, would not have been considered absurd to put a 20-year-old in charge of a ship because he may have easily had 8 years of experience in sailing by that point. Okay, so now I don't think there are many 12-year-olds who are, you know, acquiring experience on the high seas. Okay. So instead, they would be spending many more years in education than finally, after a much longer time, then they can actually start learning their job. Now, you know, some other things to think about with the signaling model of education. First of all, even I tend to assume that for any technical field that I don't understand, that they're actually learning useful skills. And I'm then often surprised when I talk to people who are studying the technical field and learn how even they don't think that they are learning things that they're ever going to use in their job. So my wife is a lawyer, works in securitizations. She had a course in securitizations in law school. You'd think that that course would have been extremely useful to her in her job, and yet it was completely worthless. Why? Because the law students studied the securitization laws of a few decades earlier. They did not study current securitization law. They went and studied law that was completely irrelevant and outmoded. So in fact, what they learned was stuff that, you know, not only was it not useful, but they learned a bunch of things that were positively confusing, because you learn the laws one way and then you show up and start doing your job and then you assume that the law is the way you heard in school. And they said, no, actually not. Actually, the law is the opposite of that. So you have negative knowledge. You know, if you hadn't taken the course, at least you would have known that you didn't know and would have checked in the book. Now you think you've learned something, you think you know the answer, and it's causing you to make mistakes that you wouldn't have made if you would just realize that you didn't understand the field. Okay, so signaling models imply that education actually has negative externalities. So this could balance out positive externalities, right? So if you're very impressed by the positive externalities of, say, you know, education cuts crime, education makes people into better voters, if you're very impressed by those, then you may say, well, you know, these negative externalities, so, you know, due to signaling, at least are weight on the other side, suggesting that government subsidies for education are not nearly the no-brainer that most economists think they are, right? Or you might take the stronger conclusion and say, you know what, I'm not all that convinced by those externalities arguments. Like, how many people who go to college as a result of there being some extra government money for college would have become violent criminals if they didn't go to college? Seems like a pretty small number. And to go and heavily subsidize college for a large number of people, the overwhelming majority of whom would never have become muggers, seems a bit odd, right? And if you go and start crunching the numbers, it's not at all clear that that would make much sense. How about more educated voters or better voters? Do you buy that? Yeah, I actually do buy it. when I give my talk on the myth of rational voter, there actually is very good evidence that more educated voters are... First of all, they think more like economists than less educated voters. And just to foreshadow this afternoon's talk, they are more libertarian than less educated voters. If you then say, that's impossible, I go to college and these people are so unlibertarian. Well, compared to what? If you go and talk to people who didn't go to college, you might find, wow, I thought the people in college were extremely statist, but at least they don't want to, say, put up a naval blockade of China to keep their goods out of the United States. You know, they only want a tariff. They don't want the blockade. All right, so that's the difference. So, I mean, I do think that actually more educated voters are better voters, and better in the sense of, you know, better understanding of economics, more free market, more libertarian, right? Although I'm still skeptical of this rationale for subsidizing education in general. The most obvious one is, look, if that's so, then maybe we should subsidize economic education. That's a good one. Yes. Yes, all right. Maybe I'm an economist, but doesn't mean I'm wrong. That's the one of the cases strongest. Okay, so maybe there. But doesn't mean that there's any point in subsidizing all this other education that has nothing to do with smarter voting. And certainly doesn't mean that we should subsidize education in fields like sociology that make people into worse voters, on average. Okay, so there's that. Okay, so in general, I'll say that I think these externalities, the positive externalities, are overrated, but whatever you think on that, these negative externalities from the signaling model tend to balance them out. And if you don't buy these positive externality stories, or you think that they're exaggerated, then signaling models actually imply that what government is doing is subsidizing waste. Government is encouraging people to do things that are wasteful. Government is basically encouraging people to take perfectly valuable time and spend it sitting in a classroom suffering from boredom. And that's what they're paying. And what would be done instead? People might be out doing something else. So, so in what sense is wasteful? Well, it's wasteful in the sense that time is money, time is valuable, and the time that people now spend in school reading and studying subjects that are not very interesting and don't have useful job skills, or don't give useful job skills, it's just as time that could have been spent doing something else, time that could have been spent doing something that, say, contributed to the economy, or could have been done doing something that's fun, another possibility. All right, now, a few other things to think about in terms of the signaling model. When people talk about subsidizing education, they often say, look, it's very important that everyone in the country be able to get the best possible education. And when I talk to people like this, I often say, you know what? That's actually already true. The best education in the country is already free. What in the world am I talking about? Well, suppose right now you decide that Princeton offers the best education in the United States and you would like to start attending Princeton. You can do it right now for free. Just drive up to New Jersey and start going to classes. No one will stop you. No one will ever ask for a card. No one will ever ask for ID. There might be some question when they start grading your exam and see that you're not on the roster, but if all that you wish to do is to go and learn from the best minds in the country, all you need to do is drive to Princeton, get an apartment, and start attending classes. No problem. Anyone can do it. There's only one little thing that will be missing after 4 years of this free Princeton education: any record that you were ever a student there. So when you go and apply for a job after this wonderful education that you got for free at Princeton, well, how well do you think it will work out for you? You go and explain, look, I know I have no diploma. It appears that I've simply been unemployed for the last 4 years. But do not be misled by appearances. Actually, for the last 4 years, I have been studying at Princeton. I have done extremely well in the classes, or would have if I had been graded. And I'm sure that you will now want to reward me for my initiative and my unconventional approach to things. Yes. If you actually ever got an interview, you might get a chance to say this and have people laugh in your face. In all likelihood, you would never get the interview. Right? On the other hand, suppose that someone were offering counterfeit Princeton diplomas where they actually hacked into the Princeton computers and created a record of your existence there, ironclad, 100%, no one will ever discover. Right? In that case, you go and try to interview with a bunch of jobs, and wow, you may find, wow, people are interested in me. People are offering to hire me, even though I don't actually know anything. And they interviewed me, and they don't seem to realize I didn't really learn anything at Princeton, since I didn't go. I didn't learn anything there. Okay, so the signaling model also fits this. According to the signaling model, it is much better to have a Princeton diploma with no education than a Princeton education with no diploma. And that's the real world. Right? That is you may have heard of a number of high-profile studies of people who were caught faking their credentials, and they had gotten very far in life. Right? Well, show some initiative anyway. Right. Now, I know my dad actually, as an employer, a few times hired people, seemed to have very good credentials, and then noticed they were terrible workers, and then did a little private detective work and found out that they had faked the resume. So, it's not foolproof. And again, of course, a person who fakes his Princeton education probably is not nearly as good a worker as someone who actually gets it. Right? In fact, someone who fakes an education might have other problems as a worker that might be dishonest or even lazy. It's kind of lazy to fake your education. Right? So there you have it. All right. So what's wrong with the signaling model? Do all economists believe this? No. I'm actually in a small minority of economists who take this seriously. Usually when, you know, over the course of a lunch, I can argue a lot of economists up to maybe 10 or 20% of education is signaling. I think it's more like 80%. Okay, now in terms of my basic point of if, you know, insofar as education is signaling, subsidizing it, but, you know, government subsidies to it make much less sense. You know, even a small fraction actually greatly changes what economists call the social rate of return calculation, the benefits that society gets if government invests in it, right? But I think the actual fraction is a lot higher, just based upon my own experience and from talking with other people. Okay, so, but signaling models often dismissed, it's dismissed by most economists, and for the most part, what they do is they ignore all the arguments I've given you. They ignore all the, they don't dispute them. They don't say no. I use Latin in my lectures. Okay, so people very rarely will actually stick their necks out and just dispute the plain facts of it seems that people spend a lot of time studying things at school that they will never use in their job. Right? Every now and then, the economist will be saying, yeah, that kind of is right. And I'll say, look, and consider this. You're an economics professor. You do use what you learned in school in your job, and this theory is plausible to you. Why? Because what does an economics professor do in his job? He teaches students what he learned when he was a student. So this is what I call academic incest, or career incest. It's where you have a job where you learn something where the job will consist in teaching people the thing that you learned. Okay, so yes, there is that, right? So that, but even there, even professors will admit that much of the time they spent in school was not very useful in their job, and their job is teaching people the very stuff that they learned. Okay, so if you imagine, how little do people use what we teach them if they aren't economics professors? Right, and many of our students don't become economics professors. In fact, most do not. Even in grad school, most probably don't, but certainly as undergraduates, most don't. So, if other economists aren't willing to just look me in the eye and claim that most people study calculus, use calculus in their jobs, what are they going to say? Well, basically, they have a list of what I'll call a priori objections. These are objections that say, look, what you're saying is impossible in theory. Theory does not allow your story to be true. All right, why not? Okay, so the simplest version, which my colleague Tyler Cowen continues to give and to publicize in a blog, even though I've told him how wrong it is many times and he knows better, is, look, if the signaling model were true, employers would simply give an IQ test and save people, say, 10 years of their lives. And since employers don't do this, the signaling model is wrong. Okay, there's several things you can say here. The easiest one is to say, yeah, except that IQ tests are basically illegal for employers to give. So that's one thing you could say. That's an easy answer, although I don't actually find it very convincing because it's so easy to give a fake IQ test, or rather, a disguised true IQ test. Okay, so if you're not allowed to give an IQ test, what do you do? Well, you want to give an IQ test to firemen. You're not allowed to, so what you say is instead, suppose that you need to go and fit a fire extinguisher into one of these three slots. Here's the shape of the fire extinguisher. Here's the shape of the slots. Show me the right slot to put your fire extinguisher into. No, this is not an IQ test. This is a test of fireman skills, which is legal. Okay, that's the kind of stuff you do. Or if you're interviewing with an economic consulting firm like McKinsey Consulting, you'll sit down and they'll spontaneously ask you, estimate the number of golf balls produced in the world per year. Go. And then they listen to what you say. And this is so close to an IQ test, it might as well be an IQ test. No, this is not an IQ test. This is a business consulting test. It's seeing whether a person can figure out an industry from intuition. Yes, and what kind of people are good at figuring things out from intuition? Smart people are. Right, what people are not so good at figuring out things from intuition? Not so smart people. Okay. So, while I am tempted to give the reply to Tyler of, giving IQ tests is basically legal, so that's why people can't do it. I think that is not really that fair because the law is too easy to get around. Okay, so what is the right answer? I think the right answer is say, well, that's true that you could just test people's intelligence and hire them right out of high school or hire them right out of junior high for that matter. But there is a problem there, which is maybe what this shows isn't that the signaling model is wrong, but that education signals something other than or in addition to intelligence. Right, and let's just go back to that example that I gave you about you happen to know a friend who was a really good student but didn't go to college or dropped out. How would you describe the personality of that friend? Yeah. How would you?
Yeah. Any
nonconformist. Another, there's lots of ways you could put it. You could say lazy, nonconformist, Lack of stick-to-itiveness. There's also more positive adjectives. I don't want to diss these people. The trait personality psychologist would use describes as saying that education signals conscientiousness. So people who don't have it are not conscientious. But here's the thing: is I don't want all my friends to be highly conscientious. I like to have some very unconscientious friends. Why? Because the unconscientious ones are the ones you call up at the last minute and say, "Dude, I've got tickets to the concert. Do you want to go?" And the unconscientious ones are the ones who say, "Yeah." The conscientious ones say, "No, I've got to work, got to study." If you have only friends like that, you're bored. Right? So the more neutral way that personality psychologists sometimes describe conscientiousness, they'll say it's orientation towards work versus play. That's a good one, right? Because look, I want to hire people who are oriented towards work, and I want to be friends with people who are oriented towards play. Right? That's good. Okay, so something that you learn from Tyler Cowen's IQ test argument is that education is signaling something either other than or in addition to education, or in addition to intelligence. And some of the most obvious candidates here are personality traits like conscientiousness, also conformity, right? Something else. How about signals that you're not too weird? Signals that you're not too weird, right? Which is something that for many jobs is important. You don't want to have some oddball who shows up to a lecture wearing shorts and like a Hawaiian. Well, this isn't quite a Hawaiian shirt, but just for most, I wouldn't hire me if I showed up in an interview like this, right? Because it does give a bad signal about personality. But I figured, you wouldn't judge me so superficially, would you? All right. So one thing the objection of if education were primarily signaling, then we just give an IQ test and forget about it, suggests that what's really going on is that education is signaling something other than or in addition to intelligence. And really, what I'd say is that it's signaling a mix. Here's something. Suppose that you have excellent SAT scores, but you go to a no-name school, then you go and apply to graduate school, or you go and just go and apply to a job. Right? What are people to think about you? Well, they see that someone with perfect SAT scores went to Podunk State. No one here went to Podunk State, did you? No, you didn't. I don't think it's a real school. Okay, so as an employer, what would you think about this person? Okay, so again, what inferences would you draw? Say, well, look, this person could have gone to any school in the world, but chose to go to Podunk State. And you say, well, maybe their family just didn't have a lot of money. And they say, well, someone with SAT scores like that can get scholarships to a lot of places, but they didn't. So what's their problem? Well, one is maybe they're lazy. Right? So this is a very, very smart person who basically went to a school where they could get straight A's with zero work. Okay, so what I'll infer then is that it's not just that I'll say this person is not as is average in conscientiousness. When you see that a very smart person went to an easy school, you generally infer that they're actually below average in conscientiousness because they could have gone to a much better place and wouldn't have needed to work very hard, and the fact they didn't shows that they have something wrong with them anyway, probably. Of course, all of this is just statistical inference, which if that bothers you, well, that's the way the world works, right? Employers don't go and look into your soul and judge you as an individual. They learn what they can and then go based on statistics. Even if they don't admit it, that's what they do. They may say they're judging everyone as an individual, but that's legally safer. Okay. Now, another objection that you get from a lot of people is, look, this is the favorite one of teachers. So yes, it is true that I don't teach any specific thing that students will ever use. All right, that's true. All right, you caught me. Fortunately, however, I teach something much more important than any specific historical fact. I teach people how to think. People in my class may not remember history, but they learn how to learn. Right? Teachers love this argument. It makes even the most useless teacher feel very important. And it's true that I didn't shape them into historians. I shaped them into thinking beings. Okay, this is a great story. It's very flattering to the egos of many teachers, but is it true? Okay, well, it turns out that in the field of educational psychology, this claim has been tested for over a century. And it's just almost completely wrong. It started off with a psychologist named Thorndike, who was sick and tired of hearing everyone tell him about how learning Latin builds mental muscles, an argument that had been made for centuries to justify teaching a dead language. So Thorndike did an experiment where he looked at students who had been assigned Latin versus ones that were not assigned to Latin, and saw, did the students who had been assigned to Latin do any better in their non-Latin courses? And they did not. Okay, so this was just an early experiment, probably wouldn't be up to modern standards, but it did inspire a large modern literature. And what was and the punchline of literature, which is known as transitive learning, is that learning is extremely specific. There's almost no evidence that anyone learns how to learn. There's almost no evidence that you can teach thinking skills. At best, what people learn is the specific material that you teach them, right? And if there is another subject that is very closely related to it, then that may help them. So learning, say, Spanish may help you learn Italian a little bit, well, even not that much. But learning Latin does not help you learn math, does not help you learn English, does not, very little anyway, very, very little. English is quite a bit further from Latin. Does not help you learn science, does not help you in almost any of the other subjects that you'll ever encounter, and in general does not help you to be a better worker. Okay, so in this literature, two things worth pointing out. First of all, the people that this is the field of educational psychology, these people are very heavily biased ideologically in favor of the view that learning how to learn exists. Right, if you're in the field of educational psychology, you're an academic. First of all, as an academic, you definitely like the idea that teachers have very deep impacts on their students. And certainly when you're studying education, you like this idea very much. And yet they just have not been able to escape from the data saying that this is simply not true. Right? So the debate within educational psychology is between the people who say there's no such thing as learning how to learn, and there never will be, and people say there's no such thing as learning how to learn, but maybe you could find it. Okay, so that is pretty much the range of debate. In terms of whether or not the signaling model of education describes the real world, it doesn't matter which side is right. So you say, look, in terms of understanding what's going on right now, is not learning, and people are not learning how to learn, because it basically just doesn't happen. Learning is so rare that you don't see it in the data. Okay. All right, so signaling models have been widely dismissed on these a priori grounds, but when you look further at the facts, the a priori objections are just poorly thought out or often just do not have the data behind them. Okay, but signaling models do explain some otherwise very puzzling facts. Okay, and the a priori objections really only apply to the very simplest, to the most simple-minded versions of theory. When you go and extend the theory to consider that people may be signaling multiple traits, and you bring in additional evidence from educational psychology about whether or not there really is such a thing as learning how to learn, to what extent is it real, turns out the a priori theories really don't hold water, and there is almost no reason to reject the signaling model other than it would wind up making a lot of teachers feel like their lives are not nearly as meaningful as they thought, but tough luck. Okay, so I think I'll stop here and take questions. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And what the market during the what we have taught and the mm-hmm. skills needed for our mm-hmm. job. Mm-hmm. Should this gap be filled by education reform? Would it still be would it be the subsidies, government subsidies to education?
What does this actually mean in terms of policy? Right? So very often when I talk to people people from the media about this, so look, here is the very most basic implication of signaling models. Stop subsidizing signaling. Okay, so the most obvious implication of signaling models is spend less on education. Right? So it winds up taking this item in the Holy Trinity and saying we're not going to worship this item anymore, saying, look, we do spend too much money on education. Right? And while it's true that we could make education better, the signaling model says that it would be even better to just do less. Right? So while if you could actually wind up teaching some useful job skills during school hours, that would be better than not doing it. But it would be even better if you were to just say turn people out into the workforce a couple years earlier. Okay, so in terms of the basic implications, cutting subsidies, encouraging education less. Is the most basic implication of it. What if we were to say completely privatize education? I think there would still be a signaling issue, right? There would still be a signaling issue. Right now, private education does signaling as well. My main thing in terms of policy there is say, look, right now government has messed up education a lot by encouraging it so much. Probably the safest alternative is just to have government get out of it entirely, right? But you may not like to hear this, but the straightforward implication of the signaling model is that the most efficient policy would actually be taxing education, actively discouraging education. Right? I don't think that's going to happen, and I think that All things considered, it would be a bad idea because government would wind up, say, you know, taxing useful education as well, and just government has done such a bad job of it, it would be better if government were to get out entirely. Right? But I don't think that education reform per se would wind up solving the problem that people will go and spend a lot of time showing off. But so, you know, encouraging education less would reduce the problem. Encouraging education less would reduce this problem, and I think that's probably about the best thing that we can hope for. So, I mean, you know, just let me put it this way. As a libertarian, the argument that I would most like to give is one that would make people like me the most, and I think would have the most traction, is to say, look, education is really important. Free markets are the best way of getting education. Let's have a free market education. I'd like to give that argument, but I don't think it's true. I think the real story is that, you know, even a free market education would encourage people to spend a lot of time showing off. And even in a free market education, there'd be a problem with people getting too much education, right? So, you know, what I'll say as a libertarian is free market education is much better than what we have, certainly, and is probably the probably all things considered is the best alternative. But in order to be truthful, I also have to say something that people don't like, which is that education is not all that it's cracked up to be. Yes. Yeah. I'll just follow up. Sure. Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't that lead to child labor?
Yeah, yes, it would. But what's so bad about child labor? I had a job as a kid. It wasn't bad. Yeah. Again, you know, let us say, what's wrong with, you know, child labor depends upon what the child is doing. If the child is working with dangerous heavy machinery, yes, that's a problem. If the child is, say, working in a store, I don't see anything so bad about that. So, you know, child is, you know, running errands. And, you know, child is, you know, is a... What is the lowest level on a ship? You know, you know, child has his parents work on a ship, and the child has a job there. I don't see anything so bad about that. When we think about child labor, we think about kids doing very hard, dangerous jobs, and certainly I wouldn't want my kids doing it. And modern societies are very unlikely. Parents are very unlikely to do that. But I do think that it would be a better world if most people started their jobs much earlier. Another question I often get asked is, so what about vocational education? Would you support that? Well, what I'd say is for government to subsidize vocational education, if it is genuinely vocational, is less wasteful than subsidizing what it does. So that's my ringing endorsement of vocational education. Okay, so we would be, you know, if government is going to subsidize education, better that it subsidizes people to learn something that is actually useful, where they acquire a skill. You know, even though I will say that it would be better if we left vocational education up to the market, but still, if government were either to say we're going to subsidize studying Aristotle or studying mechanics, at least at the end of studying mechanics, you have a mechanic maybe. Whereas at the end of studying Aristotle, at best you have an Aristotelian scholar. And so, like, how many of those does the economy need? Yes.
I have a question. Mm-hmm.
Sure. I'm very tempted to say that because. Do I think that it's possible or likely that the reason why there's so much resistance in academia to the signaling model of education is that is rent seeking? Basically, that it's in their self interest to perpetuate the myth that everything that you learn in school will be very useful to you later in life. I mean, I'm very tempted to say that because I like to make fun of people, but not so much to their faces, but in the abstract. But I don't think that's true because basically what academics think is what almost all normal people think. So, you know, I think the real story is that almost everyone, you know, as a young person, becomes convinced one way or another that education is this wonderful thing and that everyone should, and we should always want more and better of it. And then when they become an academic, they just continue in this view. Right? So, I mean, I haven't noticed any difference in views between, say, economists who work in the private sector versus academic economists. And this is, as I said, this is an area where economists actually think the normal thing. Economists agree with the general public. So, you know, much as I would like to just say, to make the ad hominem argument that you only believe in this because you're worried that you'll be out of a job, I actually don't think that's true. People occasionally ask me, but if we listen to you, wouldn't you be out of a job? And I'll say, yeah, I guess I say so. Well, maybe some philanthropist would be so grateful for me having exposed the great myths of the education industry, they would endow a chair for me somewhere. saying, "Look, you know, he was the whistleblower. He pointed out what was really going on. So, you know, I'm so grateful. I'll go and endow my chair so I continue in my occupation." As, by the way, you know, on the rent-seeking point, the education industry has been incredibly good to me. Right? I have no personal vendetta against the education industry. It has given me a dream job for life. You know, why am I biting the hand that feeds me? Because I think it's the right thing to do. Yes.
You might want to skip around the room.
Yes, fair enough. Okay, let's see. How about you there, please?
Yes. You argue against education teaching skills used in jobs and mm-hmm. personal gain mm-hmm. from that, and also the market gain from that. However, have you touched about society and how society benefits from education in terms of culture and identifying unity amongst a group?
Right. So, I mean, I did mention, many economists believe in positive externalities of education. So I mentioned them. You know, the main ones that economists mention are, you know, reducing crime, which I said it doesn't strike me as very plausible. And then there's another one, you know, there's the effects on citizenship, where I'd say that at best it's a very tiny fraction of education is these externalities. So if you're going to subsidize anything, subsidize only this tiny fraction and don't throw a ton of money at a whole bunch of things that have nothing to do with it. You mentioned so effects on national unity and what was the other one? Culture, right? So on national unity, I think national unity is generally bad. And I think that has negative externalities. the most unified countries are also generally the scariest countries. Right? I will not name names, but you know, countries that are very unified are often very scary and belligerent towards their neighbors. And I think it is a good for the world if this not be encouraged. And, you know, so that's what I'd say about unity. Is, you know, why many people talk about how great unity is and think unity is bad, and it would be better if did not have such a sense of common identity. Right, because remember, you know, so what is it that people think, we're unity, so we worked well together, and this means we also work well together against others. Again, we work well together against others, and you know, when you build up a sense of national identity, you also then almost automatically build up a sense of dislike or skepticism or hostility to people from other groups, and I think that's a much bigger problem. In terms of culture, I am very skeptical that we do that. That education does very much to encourage culture, because so many people learn to hate culture from education. So there are many people who might have eventually come to like Shakespeare, but they never will, because when they were 15, they had to listen to another 15-year-old read it very badly, and it ruined it for them. So I say, now again, if this does not resonate with you, I urge you to remember, you guys are very unusual people. Not only are you people who are getting much more education than most people, but you are getting education for fun on your vacation. Okay, so people like you are very likely to enjoy education much more than most people, right? And like me, so I enjoy high culture very much. I'm an opera fan, Shakespeare, all the stuff. And yet, when you go and honestly talk to normal people, most people do not find this culture very entertaining, and in fact, it's off-putting. So I don't think that education really does much to instill love of culture, and the people who wind up learning to love culture through formal education, I think they probably would have gotten it somewhere else anyway. Let's see, how about in the back there? Yes. Oh, sorry, Chris, right? Yeah, I mean, again, I think you need to go and look at the typical curriculum to see just how much broadening of horizons actually goes on. Basically, what you know, like the horizons that you learn or the options that you learn about in school are: look, I could be a history teacher, I could be an English teacher, I could be a math teacher. It's actually extremely narrow. I think if you really wanted to give people a sampling of what they might do, you'd have more something like a system of rotating apprenticeships, where you'd go and try a bunch of different jobs for 2 weeks. I think, you know, that would be a much better approach for actually teaching people and giving people an idea about what are all the different options that they have in this world. While there is some value to showing people options, I think education actually greatly narrows people's view of what their options are. Just think about every person who finishes college with a liberal arts degree and then says, what kind of a job do you get with an English degree? They've gone through 17 years of school and they can't even think of any jobs that use the degree they've just gotten. It doesn't seem like they've really been broadened much at all. So, So now, incidentally, another thing, question people have is, so what would go on if we were to greatly reduce subsidies to education? Wouldn't this lead many people to get much less education? Yes, that's the whole point. That is the whole point, is people getting much less education. What would that world be like? Well, a big part of it is that people would start jobs earlier, but also there would be many more apprenticeships. I mean, right now, of course, there are internships, there are some apprenticeships, but they're not a very big part of the economy, because right now, there aren't a lot of very talented people who are very young around, because talented young people tend to be in school. Okay, so basically, I think what would happen, the way the market would respond, having a lot of talented young people out there, is there'd be a big expansion of apprenticeships where you just go and work for reduced or low wages for more years when you were, say, 18 or 20, and then you'd wind up learning skills and broadening horizons on the job rather than in a classroom, which does it pretty poorly. Let's see, how about over there, please? There's a book called Transfer of Learning, which is a pretty good summary of the literature. And if you email me, I have another list of it. Or again, if you just Google, go to Google Scholar and Google Transfer of Learning, in quotes, and you will get an enormous literature on the subject. How about you there, please?
I was just looking at if we adopted such a model, which is saying, we look at the market, the labor market. Mm-hmm.
Right. So, that is really the whole point. It's really the whole point of the signaling models, to say that while more educated people are good at learning more things, education does not cause them to be that way. They were that way before when they showed up. So it's not that education takes a person who wasn't able to learn a lot of things and turns them into a person who can learn a lot of things. Rather, what education does is it puts a sticker on your forehead: person capable of learning a lot of things. Okay, now what would happen if education weren't subsidized? Well, partly people would still get education, you'd still get a sticker. It's just that you wouldn't need to be in education for nearly as long in order to convince people. Okay, so that's part of it. Another part of it, though, is that employers would switch to looking at your job resume rather than your school resume. So employers would go and say, look, this person was rapidly promoted to a bunch of their jobs. This person has had jobs in the past where they needed to know how to do a bunch of different things. I need a person who's able to do a bunch of different things, so I'm going to go and hire this person. Okay, so that is that would be the natural market response, is to first of all, just basically just say, look, you don't need as many years to prove that you were able to learn a lot of things, because it's more expensive to go, so fewer people do it. I don't think there'd be much effect at all. I do think that it would make the system more meritocratic, in that a person who was not, who say didn't have the connections to get into Harvard, might still be able to go and get an apprenticeship and work their way up. Whereas right now, there are many jobs where if you don't have the right educational background, you just can't make it. So I think it would actually be one where it would be based more upon individual merit rather than just whether or not you wind up going to the right school. How about you there, please? I'd say that the overwhelming majority of students don't contribute anything to ideas. Most of them forget what they learn in class almost immediately, so they certainly don't advance the fields that they're in. In terms of what would happen to the progress of these fields in general, I don't actually think there'd be very much effect. There would still be your elite private universities, which still have a ton of money even after their endowments have fallen. There's still plenty of places for very talented people to work on ideas their whole lives. mean, I think, you know, the main effect would just be that at the lower tail, so, you know, the vast majority of professors who don't do any research and don't make much contribution, they would wind up getting other jobs, which again, you know, that might include me, so, but still, so, you know, in terms of what is best for the world overall, I think that would actually be very useful in terms of releasing people of high but not stellar talent, you know, to doing other things. Let's see, I guess, in the back over there, please.
What method, if you don't believe that teachers actually influence your thought process, do you believe that somebody develops a thought process and a rational thought process? Is that completely self-taught, or is that taken from the environment in which that they're called socially?
So let's see. I mean, I have a big interest in twin adoption research. So, you know, first of all, you know, a lot of what's going on is genetic, and then there's a lot, but genes are very far from explaining everything. So what explains the rest? Well, here's the thing. Usually when you look at genes, you know, genes explain a lot, and then you look at everything else. In general, when you test any other specific explanation of what's going on, that specific explanation doesn't work. So there's a big question mark for what's going on. And so far, the existing theories have done pretty poorly. So, you know, even identical twins are not the same, and say that their intelligence or their critical thinking. And in terms of why they're different, it's not that easy to say. But I will say is I don't think, you know, there's very little evidence that school is instilling much in the way of critical thinking. Let's see. Over in the back there, please.
I'm actually an English major.
So. Let's see. Actually, I'll do the person behind you and then you, please. Yes. Yes. I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
How would you advise your own children?
How would I advise my own children? And also, how do I advise students? Yes, you know, very often after I give this whole lecture to a journalist, they'll say, "So then, why did you get a PhD?" And I'll say, "Have you understood nothing that I've said?" Yes, look, the reason I got a PhD is in order to have the job that I want to have, I had to have a PhD. That's why I have a PhD. And, you know, if I did not have a PhD, I could not have become a professor. So, I mean, in terms of advising my own children, I would say, look, you know, let's see, what jobs are you interested in doing? Well, if you're interested in doing those jobs, this is the kind of educational signaling you're going to have to do. So the point of the signaling model is not to say, drop out of school, school does nothing for you. The point is to say that school does something for you, but it does not do anything for society, or does very little for society. Okay? Just to be clear, I often rhetorically exaggerate and say school does nothing for you, for your skills. It definitely does something, just a lot less than people think. What I really should say is that a large fraction of the time that you spend in school does not actually give you skills. And again, just another way of understanding the negative externality. So if education increases productivity, then it is entirely possible for everyone to get more education and everyone to make more money. Right, so why? Because if education increases productivity, people produce more stuff, and that makes it possible for people to earn more stuff. On the other hand, though, insofar as education is signaling, education is basically redistributive. Okay? So if education increases your wage but does not increase your productivity, so you earn more money but you don't produce more stuff, where does that extra stuff come from? It comes from other people. It comes from other people who look bad, look a little bit worse now compared to you. Right, so in terms of what I would advise any individual, I'd say, well, you know, tell me what your career goal is, and then I'd say, hey, if your career goal is something that needs college, you're going to have to go to college. That's life. Until we can have a big change in the system, it's not going to happen. Yes, right there. Excuse me, I didn't understand the first word.
Yeah, we talked about traditional education, mm-hmm, because mm-hmm. I believe there are so many forms of education. Mm-hmm. We should rather encourage more of those other forms of education and then probably discourage the traditional education. So I kind of have a problem with using education throughout, mm-hmm. because I agree with you that this is traditional education. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I mean, I've had a number of people who complain about using the word education, and they have this great, great quote from Mark Twain saying, "I never let my schooling interfere with my education." However, almost all people, when they think education, think traditional education, and it is so sacred to them that I see value in taking the word that they use and saying something bad about it just to shock them out of their complacency. Right? And that's why the title of my third book will be The Case Against Education. why our educational system, not just public, but why our educational system is a big waste of time and money. See, I'm sorry, I was supposed to get you, and I forgot. What I say there is that a defense of education that you could give is say, look, it was never supposed to be investment anyway. It was always consumption. So, and of course, for people in this room, that argument probably makes a lot of sense. So my guess is that many people in this room actually have enjoyed school many times. Okay, and you have appreciated the culture that has been given to you and so on. My main reply there is to say it is not consumption for most people. Most people find school extremely painful, tedious, and boring. And the culture and art that you might enjoy in school, most people don't enjoy. Right? So I think that to go and encourage them to sit in a classroom and be bored just doesn't serve much useful function. It does not elevate the human soul. I think actually most people would be better off and would get more artistic experience out of being out of school and watching TV or playing video games or going to the movies. Again, for most people, I like high culture personally, but. But I would never say most people we should go and subsidize opera tickets to get more people to go because it's good because it's so part of the human experience. Not for most people. Most people just hate opera. There's nothing you can do about it. And if you make them go, not only will they not learn to love opera, but they'll be suffering there. So, just let them go.
We're out of time.
Thank you.